meeting of the Lawrence Township Planning Board provided by filing the annual meeting schedule with the municipal clerk as required by law, by filing this agenda and notice to the municipal clerk posted prominently in the municipal building and mailed to the Trenton Times and Trenton Tribune newspapers. Can we open the meeting, roll call, please?
Mr. Nowinski.
Here.
Mayor Bobbitt.
Here.
Councilman Kornacki.
Here.
Ms. Connolly.
Here.
Mr. Denver. Mr. DeShulo.
Here.
Mr. Duran.
Here.
Mr. Leggett.
Here.
Ms. Loveless.
Here.
Mr. Kiernan. And Mr. Scipio.
Okay, moving on to public participation for items that are not on the agenda for this evening. No one has? Please state your name and your address.
Just hit that button on the bottom. There you go.
My name is Brad Moore. I am the property owner of 3490 Lawrenceville Road, which the purpose of tonight is a few hundred yards from the Gulick House.
So this is, yeah.
That's on the agenda.
I mean, should I wait till that point or should I continue?
No, you gotta wait. And then you can talk when we get to that point.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Not on the agenda.
Oops, we didn't say that.
Okay, we're clear about that. Nothing on the agenda? All right, so seeing no minutes for approval, no resolutions, no applications, we'll have the public hearing now. Preliminary investigation of the property at 3641 Lawrenceville Road.
Okay.
Beth, can we swear you in? Do you swear a testimony you're about to give is truthful?
I do.
Would you introduce yourself to the audience and make a presentation?
Sure. My name is Beth McManus. I'm the board planner. I'm gonna give a presentation about the for tonight's public hearing, which is the area in need of redevelopment study. Give me one moment while I start this. Okay, so tonight, this is the public hearing for the 3641 Lawrenceville Road property, block 6601, lot 2. Essentially the property that hosts the Gulick House, which is shown in the photograph here. The purpose of tonight's public hearing is pretty singular in the sense that it reviews the report that I issued to the planning board, and the planning board's decision tonight is about answering the question, does this particular property meet one or more criteria for the designation of the site as a non-condemnation area in need of redevelopment? Concerns regarding future development of the site are certainly important, and those questions certainly need to be answered, but the purpose of this public hearing and the purpose of the report for which it's based upon asks the one question, which is, does the property meet one or more of these criteria for an area in need of redevelopment? And the property that of course I'm referring to is, as I said, block 6601, lot 2, 3641 Lawrenceville Road, with the Gulick House on it. The property is approximately 7.15 acres. It's, as you can see from the photograph here, it's partially, largely undeveloped with the exception of the Gulick House and the accessory garage that you can see towards the rear of the property. The site's located along Route 206, Lawrenceville Road, and Province Line Road. And as you can see, it's at the intersection of these two streets. The zoning district that the site sits within is the EP1 district. And you'll see a bit better from the other photographs, but in terms of the context, this site is located directly adjacent to the BMS Corporate Center along Route 206. as well as single-family homes, and a dentist office is also located adjacent to the site. In terms of further planning context, this site is subject to two settlement agreements that the township executed as part of its round four for affordable housing litigation. So for an area in need of redevelopment to be declared, there are several steps that need to be taken and several additional steps if the area is indeed declared an area in need of redevelopment. And we're at about the middle of these two processes. So the first step, which was completed already, the governing body authorizes this particular study that tonight's public hearing is based upon. It authorizes the planning board to conduct an area in need of redevelopment investigation. That was done in February of this year, and it was completed as part of Resolution 81-26. The next step is for the planning board to do just what we're doing tonight, to prepare a map of the study area, to conduct the investigation, and to hold a public hearing to consider what's contained in the report, consider comments and questions from board members, and consider comments and questions from the public. And as I said, that's the purpose of tonight's meeting. At the conclusion of tonight's meeting, or in a subsequent meeting, when the board adopts a resolution, the planning board will make a recommendation to the governing body as to whether or not the property qualifies as an area in need of redevelopment. Should the property be declared an area in need of redevelopment, that would occur through governing body action, through a governing body resolution. And if yes, the next steps would be to go ahead and prepare a redevelopment plan for the site. The reason why municipalities use their redevelopment powers, which are granted under the local redevelopment and housing law, is that it grants several additional powers to municipalities. So first, it allows municipalities to adopt a redevelopment plan. That's perhaps the most desirable power. The purpose or the what's extraordinary about a redevelopment plan is that municipalities can establish much stronger zoning parameters than they might otherwise be able to do, dealing with things or topics such as detailed site design, detailed architectural design, etc. It also authorizes municipalities to conduct land acquisition. And I will say, I want to emphasize that this is a non-condemnation redevelopment area. So should this site be declared an area in need of redevelopment, it does not give the municipality the ability to condemn the land. Other powers include tax abatements and exemptions, clearance for site improvements, negotiating of contracts with redevelopers of the property, making loans to redevelopers, also entering properties as may be needed for redevelopment activities, and working with relocations. Some of these powers are certainly unlikely to be applicable to this particular property, but this is the list of additional powers granted to towns when they use the redevelopment law to their advantage. So a little bit more about the property before I talk about the criteria. Again, this site is a little bit more than 7 acres. It's in the EP1 district. And as I said before, it's adjacent to the BMS corporate campus. And on this map in the green, the bright green, which actually depicts the RD1 zone district, you can see the BMS site to the west of the property, which is highlighted in red here. The other surrounding uses include predominantly single-family detached homes, although there is a dentist office directly across Route 206 from the site. And as I said before, the site is at that corner of Province Line and Route 206. And while it's a bit off the map, this site is just west of the municipality's border with Princeton Township. And another important feature is that despite the site's longstanding development, it does not actually have direct road access to either of its road frontages. Additionally, the site is free of environmental constraints such as wetlands, flood hazard area, etc. It is developed with one home that's locally known as the Gulick House, and that is a home that was built in 1855. There's also a detached garage on the property that you can see from the earlier aerial photograph in the presentation. This site has been vacant for many years, for at least 15 years that I can identify based on some area mapping. Also relevant to the site's planning, Route 206 is within the Kings Highway Historic District, but unlike many historic districts, the district does not extend to the entire property. This is really a linear historic district that applies to Route 206 itself, the roadway. And then lastly, the site is subject to a handful of land use and zoning applications in years past for say, assisted living. And there have been no approvals that have been exercised on the property. So there are, so moving into the redevelopment criteria, there are 8 criteria that municipalities can rely upon to designate a property as an area in need of redevelopment. And I won't go through all of these, but I wanted to highlight them for folks so that you can get a sense as to what the law directs municipalities to look at. In general, it looks for conditions of dilapidation, obsolescence, perhaps improper land utilization caused by title, etc. Also properties that have been destroyed by fire or some other weather event, for example. Properties that are within an urban enterprise. And then there's also a smart growth planning principle criteria as well. And one important aspect of this process for municipalities is that planning boards and governing bodies only need to find that a property meets one criterion in order to declare it an area in need of redevelopment. Now, in this report, I've relied upon 2 criteria for the planning board and later for the governing body's consideration. The first one is criterion A, and then also criterion D. A addresses the building conditions, is stating the generality of buildings are substandard, unsafe, unsanitary, dilapidated or obsolescent, or possess any of such characteristics or are so lacking in light, air, or space as to be conducive to unwholesome living and working conditions. Criterion D addresses areas with buildings or improvements which, by reason of dilapidation, obsolescence, overcrowding, faulty arrangement of design, lack of ventilation, light and sanitary facilities, excessive land coverage, deleterious land use or obsolete layout, or any combination of these or other factors are detrimental to the safety, health, morals, or welfare of the community. And so it's these 2 criteria that this report lays out and or relies upon. And I'll start with criterion A. Excuse me. So there are several factors of this of the buildings on this property that I rely upon and compare to criterion A and the language within it. So starting with what's stated on this slide is uncontrolled building access despite efforts. And what you can get a sense of, in particular for many of the photographs, is there are a number of window and door coverings which are attempting to prevent access to the building. Some of these have been removed, providing direct access to the building. Additionally, there's a fence around the building itself that you can see from this photograph. However, it's open in multiple locations, allowing direct access to the site. The result of that direct access, as you'll see in some of the other photographs, is vandalism, graffiti, as well as potentially there was certainly a fire in 2011 that the conditions of uncontrolled access could have contributed towards it. Additionally, in 2001, there were 17 infractions identified by the Township Code Enforcement Officer, and to date, about 25 years later, all of those infractions that I can verify remain in place. With the distinction I'm making, for example, is my office is not able to verify termite damage that was cited in the report, and it cites downed trees on the property. I can't verify whether the downed trees and the vegetation cited in that 2001 report are the same as exist today, but other aspects of the dilapidation that were noted in that report, such as overgrown, peeling paint, rotting paint trim on dwelling and garage, deteriorating front porch and steps, rotted window frames, missing exposed structural woodwork, cracked and broken windows, rotted wood window shutters, missing window screens, obstructed and damaged roof gutters, infestation such as birds' nests and squirrels' nests in garage soffits, termite damage which I can't identify or verify, scattered branches and other landscaping debris, overgrown and damaged driveway, lack of house number identification, and loose and missing tile roof tiles on house and garage. Those conditions remain today, 25 years later, and that's verified by not only the site visit that occurred, but also the lack of permitting that's been issued to the building based on over requests to township departments. Additionally, in 2011, there was a fire that broke out on the property from the fire inspector noted as a result of faulty wiring. There appears to be no evidence of remediation by way of permitting on the property, so the fire damage, the charring in the building presumably remains. Also contributing to criterion A is the collapsed roof garage roof, which you can see in the top right photograph. There are a number of instances of exposed wall studs, and I had cited the window and the door covering, some of which have been removed as providing uncontrolled access. But quite honestly, there is also uncontrolled access to the building from simply holes in the wall, which you can see in the top left photograph. And there's also, you can see in that top left photograph as well, entrance to the there's also entrance to the basement area in the top left building for the lower hole, if you will. So those are a couple examples of those exposed wall studs as well as the uncontrolled access to the building and holes in the building. There are a number of broken windows throughout the site. Additionally, there are examples around the building of damaged foundation. There are foundation cracks, which you can see. It may be difficult to scale at the bottom left photograph. There are also examples of the foundation bowing around the building. There's vine infestation throughout the building. You can see it in all of these photographs here and throughout the report as well. And then additionally, there's debris throughout the site. So debris, in part from the building perhaps being opened or just simply breaking down, which you can see in the top left photograph. But there are also some examples of plywood with nails sticking up throughout the property, so it really is incumbent upon anybody to be very careful as they traverse the site. Additionally, for criterion A, there are also some locations that make the structural integrity of the building questionable. And as I said before, there are examples of cracked and bowed foundation. There's also, as you can see in the bottom left photograph, that's a photograph into the basement I was able to obtain. And that is a support beam that is not fully supporting the building. There's a gap between the floor of the, or I guess the ceiling for the floor above and the beam itself. And then, as I said before, there's the collapsed garage roof, which is clearly not structurally sound as well. And so for these reasons of the dilapidation that exists on the property and has existed for, much of which has existed for 25 years since the township had those 17 infractions cited in 2001, as well as the fire damage that does not appear to have been abated. My report recommends in favor of finding that the property qualifies for criterion A. The second criterion that the report relies upon, criterion D, the report relies upon the obsolescence, faulty arrangement, and design aspects that are cited in this criterion. And so it cites the lack of road access. There's no clear curb cut to the site from either road. There's also no clear driveway connecting the streets to the garage. And the significance of that is the lack of EMS and police access to the site. And that's relevant if you think about the fire that broke out, as well as the vandalism and the graffiti that you'll see in another few photos. Also relevant is the lack of septic waste disposal on the site. The septic system was abandoned several years ago, and that was noted by the health inspector. For criterion D, it also references dilapidation, although the focus is less on the detailed building conditions and more about site dilapidation. But notwithstanding, I've noted the holes in the building wall as significant dilapidation throughout the site. And there's also dead vegetation and debris throughout the property as well that contributes to that. And then for criterion D, I also wanted to note that the site appears to have become an attractive nuisance. And that's in part due to or represented as the uncontrolled access to the building, as there are opportunities to go into the basement as well as the first floor and upper floors. And in fact, the photograph on the right here identifies another hole into the basement with a covering that's adjacent to it that's actually been removed in order to facilitate that access. There's also, as I mentioned, the lack of police and EMS access to the property, which contributes to the site being able to serve as an attractive nuisance. And all of this is, one example of it is the graffiti that exists throughout the property. There's graffiti on the garage as well as the principal building, which you can see on these two photographs. And so because of the lack of access, the lack of septic, and the dilapidation of the property as a whole, I also recommend in this report that or find that the property meets criterion D as well. And so, all in all, this report and my recommendations state that the study area, block 6601, lot 2, meets criteria A and D, and I recommend that the board find that the area does indeed qualify as an area in need of redevelopment. And so the next steps would be for the planning board to review, to make its own recommendation to the council. And to be clear, the planning board can agree with what's in the report entirely, can disagree entirely, or can agree to some aspects, but not the others. But the board should certainly make its own consideration and recommendations. Those will be passed on to the governing body, and then the governing body can do as they choose as well. They can agree with some, all, or none of the planning board recommendations. And so with that, folks, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Beth. Very comprehensive. I'm driven by them many times. Can you explain what non-condemnation plan is? Because my understanding of eminent domain or condemnation would require the municipality make compensation to the owner. And can you tell us who the owner is? And last question, is there any chance of remediation for this house?
So for the first question, condemnation, this is a non-condemnation redevelopment area. And the way that the local redevelopment law has historically worked in New Jersey up until the last several years is any property that met the criteria and that was designated as an area in need of redevelopment The municipality then had the power to condemn for the purposes of advancing redevelopment as they saw fit. In, I'm sorry, I forget what years, perhaps the last 10 years or so, the state of New Jersey amended the local redevelopment law and declared that municipalities must identify upfront whether or not the property will be a condemnation area in need of redevelopment, which would give them the power for condemnation or a non-condemnation. If it were a condemnation redevelopment area and the municipality decided to move forward with condemnation or eminent domain, they would essentially, through an ordinance, they would declare that they're taking the property, and then yes, they would be obligated to provide fair market value to the property mm-hmm. owner. As a non-condemnation redevelopment area, we don't have the power of condemnation through the redevelopment law. There are other ways for municipalities to condemn property, but it's not relevant to this particular redevelopment area. So I hope that answers that first part of your
yes.
question. You also asked who the owner is.
Yes.
I don't recall their formal entity name, but in terms of the party that we executed the settlement agreement with, it was 3641 Lawrenceville Road, LLC. And so they represented ownership of the property. Whether there are additional holding companies in place, that I don't know. And I'm sorry, I know there was a third component of the question.
Can it be rebuilt, given this condition?
I don't have a structural assessment that would suggest whether the building can or cannot be reconstructed as it sits today. I can tell you that it's very clear that reconstruction, relocation of the building would be a very costly effort.
Thank you.
I've got a question actually for two of our professionals. One is for you, Jim, and I know this is before your time, but they got an inspection report 25 years ago that said you've got to fix this, 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 and this, and obviously they didn't do it. Do you know why they didn't, or whether there's, should they have done it? What is the general recourse when people are told, hey, you've got a problem here, deal with it?
It's a good question. I mean, they were certainly notified of all of the issues, but they never responded to fix them. Sorry about that. So yeah, there was no response by them. They never responded. Never fixed fixed any of the damage to the house. I'm not sure what the township could have done at that point, other than to, you know, take ownership of the issue itself and make those repairs. That's probably the only thing they could have done.
And the township didn't want to take that route, I assume.
Yeah, I mean, they would have had to spend, you know, millions of dollars and then put a tax lien on the property to try to recover those funds.
Okay. And question, Beth, for you. The sewer is that run along 206, I believe, were installed in the early 60s. And my question is, why is this an EP1 zoning, which I was assuming had to do with bad soil for septic systems if there is a sewer available?
I can't speak to how the property received that zoning designation, however many years or perhaps decades ago. But in general, aside from the very large BMS corporate office, much of the surrounding area are single-family, larger lot homes. But I can't tell you the impetus for the zoning.
Thank you.
But I'll just add to that, though, that area does not have public sewers. This public sewer for this property requires a significant sewer extension down 206, either through a portion of the BMS site or along 206. So it's a major cost and undertaking to bring sewer there.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was under the impression that the sewer line ran all the way up towards Princeton.
No.
Thank you.
I have a question. question. This is for our attorney, if you can answer it or not. So this property has, this dwelling has been on a property owned by the owner for approximately 30 years. They've taken no steps whatsoever to maintain, preserve, or rehabilitate this property. As a property owner rights in New Jersey or elsewhere, if there is no application to occupy that property, to live in that property, let's just say Mr. Duran has a house on his property and he decides to leave and not do anything and just let it go. The township can say you need to make this at least safe. You have to put a fence around it. You've got to board it up. But can any government compel any property owner to maintain their dwelling in a way other than to make it safe from public access?
Well, I think the answer is no, because the enforcement that the township had would have been, as somebody pointed out earlier, to enforce and prosecute the violations and try to get remedies through the court to get those violations addressed. But unless you have a aesthetic or a property ordinance that requires property owners to upgrade those things or keep them up to date, you really can't enforce that. You can enforce the violations, but you can't enforce somebody to do other than keep it safe, fence it, you know, close up the windows, and make sure that it's not a public hazard. But you couldn't do much more than that.
So if they decided, hey, we want people to work out of this building or live in this building, then that's where the government can come in with access and say, these are the hundreds or thousands of things that you're going to need to address before you make it safe for occupancy.
Exactly. In other words, you go through code enforcement, and the construction department would tell them what they'd have to do, and that would be your hook.
Okay. It's my understanding, I don't know if this is accurate or not, that this particular dwelling was the subject of a demolition permit, which was stopped at one time. So the property owner wanted to demolish it, but at some point that was stopped. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's correct. They applied for a demo permit. I think it went to the Historic Preservation Committee, and then it was ultimately denied.
Okay. And the other thing that I just was just doing a little research on this, and Beth, maybe you can answer this. So we know that they own this property for all these years, and they just let the house go, boarded it up, and just let it go. For this particular process that we're in right now, is that any part of the analysis in the process? Who's at fault for this dilapidated dwelling, and can that impact whether or not a governing body can deem it an area in need of redevelopment?
The short answer is no. The redevelopment criteria or otherwise in the redevelopment law doesn't cite things like what I think you might be referring to as intention or the reasons why, what led to the conditions. It's just a matter of, does the property meet the conditions listed in the criteria, yes or no?
Yeah, I was trying to find cases. I couldn't find any cases that kind of dealt with, you know, like, so this really, other areas of redevelopment, like what we did at 3131, mm-hmm. that had to do with commercial buildings that became obsolete and, mm-hmm. you know, not maintained. But this is actually just a house that was allowed to just deteriorate. Mm-hmm. But so there's really no, I could find no cases that said, hey, you can't now change that and not have that an area in need of redevelopment because certain steps were not taken.
I agree. I'm not familiar with any case law on that topic.
I know that the house is eligible for historic preservation, but it's not registered. So would that have made a difference?
No. If it had been on any of the registries, the question of whether or not the property meets the criteria would remain the same.
And I think it's not on any state or federal
right.
landmark. Yeah. Right. We may, as a town or some organization, may have deemed it historic in some sense. But,
in our master plan.
But my understanding of the law is that if it was on a state or federal historic landmark, then the property owner takes responsibility to maintain that property in some degree. I mean, that's my understanding. And I think that's another reason why that's not happened here.
I think they could have still, you know, done whatever they wanted with it because it's a private owner. There's no public
correct. Money. Yeah. That's correct.
No. One last. What bothers me is that what Beth said is that this is, in her opinion, an attractive nuisance, which, while I don't think it would put liability on the township, could result in injuries more serious than that and liability on the landowner's responsibility. And I think it's shown by the graffiti that's there, probably the access to it. So that bothers me, you know, from a liability standpoint, you know, outside of, you know, what the township is trying to do.
Something just occurred to me. Kevin's example of me leaving my house and letting it deteriorate, it's not likely to happen, but this situation with the Gulick house is not an isolated incident. And in fact, there is a house on my street that exactly that happened to. And is a current situation. So we may want to think about how the township approaches situations just like this, because there's more than one.
Like more teeth for enforcement?
Yeah, so listen, I mean, I don't, this is not my area of law at all, but if there's a property owner that has no intent or purpose to occupy a dwelling, I can't foresee any governmental entity saying, you know, you need to do this no matter what. I just don't see that happening. I mean, property rights are pretty significant in the United States and in this state. So, I don't know. It's interesting.
I guess the question of condemnation comes in. At what point does the township say, this is not safe to the point where it needs to be condemned?
Yeah. And then what happens next? The town incurs, the taxpayers of Lawrence Township incur the cost to demolish it and completely take all the debris off and return it to safety. And that becomes a part of the equation.
Yeah, that's
right. Right.
So,
and then if the
years.
Town does that as a policy, then more people would most likely walk away from a property. I mean, it's just that, you know, it's just something that. That you gotta, there's a lot of different balls in the air when it comes to something like that.
And the taxes were being paid on this property, right?
Yeah.
There's no driveway access now, but there's had to have been at some point, right?
Yes, there must have been to the property. I can just tell you that there's no driveway on the property today, and there's no defined curb cut.
Nature took over.
Yeah.
And then the King's Highway district there, I mean, not that it's relevant here now, but what kind of restrictions are there? It's just that the highway can't be widened, right? And it's a private owner, so.
Yes, like I said, the property itself is not within the historic district, for the King's Highway Historic District, but the road frontage, and perhaps it extends a little bit into the property, but the primary portion of the site is outside the historic district. I would anticipate any road improvements will be subject to oversight for that historic district.
Beth, you said the benefit of it, the redevelopment study. Then we can do the redevelopment plan, and that gives the municipality more power or more opportunity to put in things like it's on the historic district, so you want the buildings to look historic, and maybe additional buffers, and you said more negotiating power.
Yes. Yeah, there are a few powers. Well, there's several powers, but those that are most often used for municipalities when they declare a site as an area in need of redevelopment is greater control set forth in the redevelopment plan. If you municipalities can, as I said, they can go much more detailed in terms of site design, building footprint, parking design, etc., than what typical zoning would allow for, and it can also enable municipalities to enter into redevelopment agreements with redevelopers, and through those redevelopment agreements, they may be able to address other issues that are outside the purview of zoning.
And the Lawrence Football Trail too goes partially in there, and that's a protected.
Yeah, and that can be part of, if the site were going to be declared an area in need of redevelopment, if there's a redevelopment plan adopted for it, that can be one of the components of the plan.
And if it meets the criteria, does the planning board have the authority to say no and...
No to the designation?
Yeah.
I feel like that's more of a legal question. It would be very unusual for a planning board to say, yes, we think it meets the area need of redevelopment criteria, but no, we're not going to recommend designation. I'm not sure how to answer the rest of that.
Yeah, I think that, you could say that, but there would be still the ability of the governing body, just like they can anyway, override that and come up with reasons why and move ahead. So if you could take that position, but it still could be declared an area by the governing body.
But we just went over the benefits, so thank you.
I have one more question. Beth, in terms of criteria, and in your experience, is this close? Is this clearly an area in need of redevelopment in terms of when you apply the criteria and facts as they exist on that property now? Like, what does your experience tell you?
Yes, I think the property, in particular for criteria A, is one of the easier designations I've made. Criteria A references essentially the dilapidation of the building and the unsafe conditions resulting from it. I think that is very clear in my mind. Criterion D, I also think is quite clear, which is faulty arrangement and design. But I think A is the most obvious criterion.
I have a question. I have a couple questions. I'll start with my question. This criteria for redevelopment, that's from where?
The local redevelopment and housing law, that's a New Jersey statute.
Okay, so that's applied throughout the state, doesn't matter what.
Correct.
What is on the property, be it an old house, mm-hmm. a new house, whatever. If it's been 25 years and you know it needed repair and paint all rotted and missing woodwork on the house and garage, or repair all cracked and broken windows from 25 years ago, that's...
Absolutely. So, and I want to be, one thing I do want to be, that I think is worth noting, is that the dilapidation noted for the building is more than just simply cracked paint and a couple of broken windows. There are, I'm sure, a number of buildings throughout the township that would have those two conditions that would not qualify. Those are two very obvious conditions on this particular building, but there are other much more significant conditions, such as the building holes in the wall, that also contribute to the dilapidation.
No, I was just going to follow up and say, yeah, that was 25 years ago, yeah. So I can only imagine what's happening today. And then 15 years ago was the fire that started in the basement and extended through the first, second, and third floors. This is from the incident report.
Mm-hmm.
It was determined that the house still had electric service, the ignition was in the basement, heaviest charring was visible above the interior wall and door and the ceiling rafters. And so again, this was 15 years ago. I can only imagine what the house is today. So it seems fairly straightforward in terms of meeting the criteria for me.
And one more thing I want to just have on the record is this particular property was the subject of, I think, 3 development applications that were unsuccessful. So this house had the opportunity to have been dealt with in one way or another over these past almost 30 years. But each attempt failed, and now we're here for a fourth and different attempt to develop this property. And so the house has always maintained relevance at every application for development. It continues, but it could have been dealt with 25 years ago should an application by Care One have been successful. So it's just, we find ourselves here now because of multiple failed attempts.
I think for the benefit of the public to know that the first application was in 1997, the second in 1999, and the third was in 2011, the same year as the fire. So this was...
There was another one. There's a more recent one that was just abandoned because I guess they now figured...
Yeah, I think that was a couple years ago.
We're going housing as opposed to a facility.
Right, they never so actually four. Came into the board.
Never came to the board.
Ah, thank you.
And if there's some hardware or mantles or even some of the studs or something that's salvageable, could that be in the redevelopment agreement?
Absolutely. I think that's something that is easily addressed in the redevelopment agreement, and we could also address it in the redevelopment plan more generally.
Just give me 1 second, I need to change your battery.